This is Brewers on Tap.
Welcome to episode number 62 of Brewers on Tap. Link Grindle with you for another edition of the podcast as the Brewers completed the Jonathan Lucroy, Jeremy Jeffress trade from August 1st this week. Ryan Cordell, a 24-year-old prospect that primarily will play center field but can also play the corners and even some infield, is the player to be named later from Texas. Cordell has a good combination of speed and power. He managed to hit 19 home runs this season at Double-A Frisco, even though he's been out of the lineup with an injury for the last month. He hit .264, drove in 70 runs over 107 games. The Brewers also brought a few extra bodies up as September call-ups. Right-handed pitcher Taylor Youngman is back with the crew, as is right-handed pitcher Damian Magnifico. Youngman, of course, finished the season in Biloxi, Magnifico with Colorado Springs. Also, catcher Andrew Susak, who was a part of that Will Smith trade, he is set to join the Brewers as well. Well, let's take a look at this week in Brewers history.
And now, this week in Brewers history.
September 7, 2010, all-time saves leader Trevor Hoffman notches career save number 600 in a 4-2 win versus St. Louis. Time to review this past week for the Brewers. Very strong week this past week. A win against the Cardinals on Wednesday in 3-1 fashion. Matt Garza got the win, Tyler Thornburg the save, and Kirk Nieuweneis with the big hit in the game.
1-0 pitch, swing and a drive deep into right field. Brewers take a 3-0 lead.
The Brewers then had Thursday off before traveling to Pittsburgh for a three-game series with the Pirates. Friday's contest, a 1-0 shutout in favor of the Crews. 7 total pitchers used in the game for the Brewers. Just the third time that that's been done in a shutout in MLB history. Then Saturday's game was a back-and-forth affair that was highlighted by Chris Carter's two-run blast.
Pitch to Carter. Swing and a drive deep into left. Brewers take a 2-1 lead. Oh, what a shot by Chris Carter. He just picked up Hernan Perez in a big way, and he gave the crew a 2-1 lead.
Sunday was a runaway 10-0 win for the Brewers with home runs from Chris Carter, two from Domingo Santana, and this one from Jonathan Villar.
2-2 coming back. Hit down the left field line. Marte giving chase. Back it goes. It's gone! Just inside the foul pole. A pinch hit grand slam for Jonathan Villar. Brewers lead it 5-0.
The Brewers swept the Pirates and returned home for a Labor Day matchup with the Cubs. Good game going into the eighth inning, but the Cubs eventually broke it open on their way to a 7-2 win. And then on Tuesday night, the Brewers came back and were able to claim a win to even up this series with the Cubs. Now let's get the 4-1-1 on the Brewers hitters.
Let's break it down.
Lane Grindle joined by Brewers assistant hitting coach Jason Lane. Laner, good to see you. We flipped the calendar now into September, and you've had a lot of young guys that you and DC have worked with over the course of this year. How do you feel some of those guys have developed as the season's gone along?
I think some guys have made some good progress. I think they've some of them who've been with us early in the year had some early struggles and had to sort of grind through those things, and they've made some adjustments and continue making adjustments, and they've seen some of those adjustments pay off a little bit, but they're understanding that it's a tough game up here and that you really have to be disciplined at this level, and they're starting to get that.
You know, you experienced this as a player and now experiencing it as a coach, but how fun is it when you see, and we'll use Keon Broxton as the example because he's the easy one to use for this year, guys go up and down, and each time you get them back up with the big league club, they look a little bit different. They've developed a little bit more.
Yeah, I think young players, they certainly never want to go down. But I think Keon's done a great job when he did get sent down, the times he did, that he went down with a workman-type mentality and ironed some things out and then came back up, having made a few adjustments, and then obviously up here has continued to work on it. But it's good to see when they take that demotion and make something positive out of it rather than it's easy to get down on yourself and go down there and struggle just because of the letdown. But he hasn't done that at all, and it's starting to pay off for him.
He's hitting the ball hard. Had a tough homestand, but prior to that was having a really big stretch where he was hitting the bar. Even the outs that he was making were hard-hit balls. What did you see as the biggest difference for him that was allowing him to make that change?
With him, he tightened his swing up a little bit. He had a little length early in the year on it, and so in that, his timing was off where he had to make earlier decisions and was prone to chasing pitches out of the zone. And anytime you're doing that, it makes it really tough to hit. This recent hot streak, he was a lot short of the ball, which gave him more time to make good decisions with clarity. And he was squaring balls up in the strike zone at a high rate. And, you know, he's still going to struggle with that. And he went through a little rough stretch at home, and it was still the same thing. And he's aware of that, continues to work on it. And when he tightens things up, the ball comes off with authority.
And someone that is coming off a pretty good homestand is Orlando Arcia. It looked like he's starting to settle in and understand what his plan at the plate needs to be.
Yeah, similar to Keon, is he had a ton of movement in his swing. And when he got up here, he got exposed a little bit early on. And we've talked to him and worked with him on shortening that up so he has more time for pitch recognition. That's the biggest thing. At this level is you need to recognize and you need to hit strikes, and the pitchers are better up here where if they see a hole or a weakness, they'll exploit that, and that's when you have to make adjustments off of that. He's done a better job of that of late and gotten some big hits and made much more hard contact, which is all you can really do as a hitter is make your goal to hit the ball hard. It doesn't always mean you're going to get hits, but it gives you the best chance at a hit.
You know, one of the things that we talk about a lot with the young guys, Broxton and Arcia, and I think we forget that Jonathan Villar is a young guy still, too. Aaron Perez is a young guy still, too. And so there's a lot of these guys that you're working with that are getting extended playing time, really for the first time in their career. Perez has shown some power, and maybe we hadn't seen that as much prior to this year. What have you seen with his swing that's allowed him to show some of that power?
I've always seen the power in his swing in batting practice. I saw it early on. I think we all did. I think the fact that he's getting consistent at bats, it's showing up. But again, he has a longer swing in the zone where he stays through the ball for an awful long time, and so he has more room for error to catch the ball a little deep and more towards the front and still drive the ball with power. And you know, as he's gotten more at bats, one of his big problems too was chasing pitches and swinging a lot at a lot of offerings and wasn't walking a ton. And as the season's gone on, he's been more selective. And when he gets a ball that he can handle, he hits the ball hard, and that's starting to happen more often. He's been very consistent as his at bats have been more consistent. It's great to see. And VR has been a great leadoff man all year. He competes really well. I think one of his strengths is as a competitor, even when he's not feeling great in the box, he competes really hard, and a lot of times that alone can make you have success. And he's been a great jumpstart to our offense with a high on-base percentage and maintained a fairly high average all year. He hasn't had any real major slumps that I can think of, which is great to see.
Jason, we appreciate it. Thanks so much.
All right. Thanks for having me, Lane.
Our thanks to Brewers assistant hitting coach Jason Lane for joining us here on Brewers on Tap. It's time now to go down on the farm.
Checking in on the farm.
Well, the big news for the Brewers minor league affiliates is Class A Wisconsin. They punched their ticket into the Midwest League playoffs this past weekend, and they are headed to the playoffs. It's going to be exciting. They will begin their quest for a Midwest League championship Wednesday in Appleton. They play the Cedar Rapids Colonels in a best-of-three series. The first game in Appleton, the second, and the, if necessary, third game will be in Cedar Rapids. It'd be their second Midwest League pennant for the Timber Rattlers as they won their first title back in 2012. Right-handed pitcher Jordan Yamamoto will take the bump for the T-Rats in the opening game against the Colonels. Pearl City native, finished his regular season campaign going 7-8 with a 3.82 ERA in 27 games, and he allowed 31 walks while striking out 152. His 152 placed him second in the Midwest League and third in the organization. The Timber Rattlers in general set a Midwest League record with 1,294 strikeouts this season. That mark broke the previous record of 1,292 that was held by the 2011 Dayton Dragons. Here's my conversation with Timber Rattlers manager Matt Erickson from back earlier in the summer when he knew he had a really talented club with a great chance for a big second half surge. This is Brewers on Tap, and we're joined by Wisconsin Timber Rattlers manager Matt Erickson. This is an exciting group of guys that you have here. A lot of young guys, but a lot of talent in this group. You have to feel good about this group.
Absolutely. You know, every year when you come into the championship season, you have a fresh, new, young talent. And as you can see behind me, it doesn't look like we're going to get much preparation today, but that's what we try to do. Every year when we come out of spring training, we try to develop a daily routine for these young kids so that talent can turn into baseball skill. And hopefully we put together a consistent ball club over time.
Another young guy that was acquired in the offseason is Eson Diaz, and he has really come around in June. He's had a nice June for you. Extremely talented young man that can play the middle infield, play either spot in the middle infield. How valuable has he been to you guys this year?
He's been exciting to watch and exciting to see grow up just in the few months that he's been here. Some maturity issues, you know, as far as dealing with failure, but the baseball skill is good. It's exciting. He's a guy that right now is playing shortstop. You might grade his arm as below average when you're talking about big league shortstops, but his footwork is really good. His feet are active, and we've challenged him and his footwork to increase his arm development as far as accuracy and strength, and he's really taken to that. He's shown that he can make all the plays at shortstop, going in the hole, deep in the hole, coming in on slow rollers. He turns the double play nice. He's got good hands. Some people think they see him on the other side of the infield at second base at higher levels. So we've introduced some of that to him. He's played a few series over at that position in the first half, as well as taking ground balls there on a daily basis. As far as the stick is concerned, I think he's a guy who's capable of hitting for average and power. You know, little in stature, but stocky, and has a quick bat that can really create some bat speed and hit the ball with power to all parts of the field.
Does he remind you of anybody you've seen at this level in the last few years?
That's a good question. You know, maybe not so much in the last few years. I'm drawing a blank here. Second baseman with the Mariners. Was with the Yankees.
No, oh, Robbie Cano.
Robin Cano, yeah. He likes Cano. He looks up to Cano. You know, he kind of emulates some of the stuff that he does around him. And you can see some of his actions in his game. But that's the guy that I think he would most likely want to be resembled to.
Absolutely. Kate Gatewood, back with you this year, and had that big week in early May. One, he's learning third base. How has that transition been? And two, has that at times, you think, distracted him from the offensive game? He certainly has great power, as we know.
For sure. Yeah, Jake, as you mentioned, going through a position change, it started last fall a little bit when we started moving him to third base and then flip-flopping shortstop to third base. And then when we acquired Eson Diaz, and it was they made the decision that Diaz was going to come here and play shortstop primarily every day, they thought maybe the body type projects better at the third base position. And to be honest, you know, there's not a lot of prospects at the third base position standing in the way. There's a definite need at higher levels throughout the organization and hopefully eventually in the big leagues at third base for Mr. Gatewood. But I think his first test was realizing that the third base position was more of a front-backed position as opposed to a ranging side-to-side position. It's more of a reaction drop-step position side-to-side, but you really got to be able to recognize when to come in on slow rollers and bunts and stuff like that. And if you saw the last couple series here, he's starting to make that play look routine. For a big man at 6'5", he's got some pretty good body control, and he's showing that he can field the ball off the run, make the exchange, and give an accurate throw over to first base. He's made a number of nice plays over the last few days on that particular play. As you mentioned, you know, the power potential stands out with the bat. His challenge as a young hitter is trying to get in position consistently to recognize pitches. Too often he'll chase out of the zone and he'll get behind in counts, and then he becomes a defensive hitter. If he can learn early in the count to become a little more selective and win more counts, then I think you'll see some of those power numbers go through the roof. But until then, you're going to see some inconsistencies in his offensive game.
You've had some injuries you've had to deal with. Monte Harrison, of course, is going to be out for 4 to 6 weeks. And Trent Clark's been on and off the DL since he joined you. But what have you seen from those guys? Monte was really starting to turn the corner, it looked like, before the injury.
Yeah, absolutely. Monte, you know, everybody makes a big deal of that physical ability, and rightfully so. But in when you talk about baseball skill, the physical ability, I mean, you have to put yourself into situations to use that skill. And before he got hurt, there was a two-week stretch where he was impacting the game in every aspect of the game. At the plate, he was getting into position to recognize pitches. He was winning counts. The ball was coming off his bat hard to all fields. He was running down balls in center field, getting really good jumps off the bat there. And on the bases, he was starting to make an impact. And not just by stealing bases, but going first to third and finding the ball when he gets to an extra base and taking advantage of throwing errors. I know there was a couple times he got to third and snapped his head around, found that the ball was kicked away at first base and was able to score. So he was starting to think ahead of the game and using that skill to his advantage.
And Trent Clark, what did you see from him in the brief amount of time you've been able to work with him so far?
Trent Clark, he's a guy that's exciting. You know, one of the things that jumped out right when he got here was his willingness to put pressure on the defense. He gets out of the box and he's looking for the extra base all the time. Unfortunately, he played for about a week and then had a hamstring issue that has hampered him as of late. He sat out for about a week to 10 days, and then we brought him back. He was fine for a few days, and then he had another leg injury, same leg, different spot. So he's currently on the DL, and we're going to make sure that his lower half is healthy before we put him back out on the field. But another kid that's exciting, could impact the game both offensively and defensively.
What do you like about managing at this level, Matt?
Well, there's a lot of teaching. You have to have a lot of patience. There's no doubt about it. But what I like about it is, you know, you get a fresh crew each year, and there's a lot of things behind the scenes that aren't so much baseball oriented. You know, that you help the kids away from the field, try to develop as young men, try to be respectful, and understand that there's a lot of people that are one cheering for them, and there's a lot of people that are involved in the overall development of them. And I think it's important that they understand that and appreciate that. And then obviously it's important for them to go out on a day-to-day basis and give their best effort possible.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Our thanks to Matt Erickson for joining us here on the podcast, and best of luck to the Timber Rattlers in the playoffs. We'll be following them closely. Here's the rest of the breakdown for the Brewers minor league affiliates. The Colorado Springs Sky Sox finished the year with a 67-71 and one record in the Pacific Coast League. Double-A Biloxi was in the playoff hunt until the very end, but fell just shy of making it. In fact, about a half game out of making it into the Southern League playoffs. They went 39-30 in the first half. They lost a lot of that core of that team that got moved up to Colorado Springs as the season went along, and finished 33-37 in the second half of the Southern League season. Class A Brevard County, very young team in a very challenging Florida State League, had a tough first half at 23-45, had an even tougher second half at 17-52 in that second half. Look for that team to be much improved next year. They'll be moving, of course. They will not be in Brevard County. They played their final game in Brevard County on Sunday. That organization is going to rename the franchise and move to Kissimmee. And then, of course, the rookie Helena Brewers up in the Pioneer League. Still with a few games left for them, but they 12-21 in the second half. They went 15-23 in their first half in the Pioneer League. Some notes on some specific players. Everybody talking about Lewis Brinson and what he's done since being a part of the Brewers organization as a part of that Jonathan Lucroy, Jeremy Jeffress trade. He went 1-for-4 in his final game of the season on Sunday, and in 23 games with the Colorado Springs, he batted .382 with 13 extra base hits. And a guy to keep an eye on in those Class A playoffs, Corey Ray has been moved back down to Class A so he can be a part of the playoffs. So take a look at the first-round draft pick for the Brewers playing in the Midwest League playoffs. But also Lucas Ercig, who was a 2016 draft pick. Lucas Ercig has had a phenomenal first year of professional baseball, hitting .327, 17 doubles, 4 triples, 9 home runs, 51 RBIs, and 9 steals in 68 games between Helena and Wisconsin.
Here's what's on tap with the Brewers.
Well, the Give Back game is coming your way Sunday, September 25th. It's the Reds game at 1:10 p.m., the final Brewers home game of the season. And this is going to be the first time in franchise history that this has happened. The Brewers are going to donate nearly all ticket proceeds from their game that day to 4 local charities: Boys and Girls Club of Greater Milwaukee, the MAC Fund, which is Midwest Athletes Against Childhood Cancer, Make-A-Wish Foundation Wisconsin, and the Wisconsin Humane Society. Tickets for the Brewers' 25th of September game versus Reds are not available for purchase as they traditionally are. Instead, fans will be able to get tickets by going to brewers.com/giveback and naming their own ticket price. The minimum price is $10. All proceeds from their purchase will be donated to one of those 4 participating charities. Tickets will be made available by level and distributed on a first-come, first-served basis, beginning with field level, then on to Loge, then club, and etc. Fans can get the best seats in the house for a great price, and you can be helping with a local cause as well. You can call 414-902-4000 if you want to make donations of greater than $50. Each ticket can be purchased for a non-deductible minimum donation of $10, and then you can pay more to support the charity up to $50 per ticket. And then, as I just told you, if you want to go above $50, it's 414-902-4000 to get that done. Should be fun. We hope that we'll see you out there at the ballpark on September 25th for the final game of the 2016 regular season for the Brewers. That's going to do it for Brewers on Tap. We thank you for listening. Until next week, I'm Lane Grindle. Have a good one, everybody.